Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Smart Stuff Furniture, the makers of thoughtful furniture solutions for babies, kids, and teens with hidden features like secret storage, built-in lights, and easy access outlets. To learn more and enter to win up to $5,000 in nursery furniture, visit smartstufffurniture.com/YHL.
I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're cracking our bank account wide open. Well, not really, but we're talking about how we budget for home projects and big renovations like our beach house. Plus, we debate what should be hands-off when you're somebody's house guest.
Well, hello.
Hi, guys. Happy Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or any day that you're listening.
A broad greeting.
It's a broad greeting. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon.
Well, we shared a couple weeks ago on Instagram a picture of the pink siding starting to go up on our beach house.
It's all happening, guys.
And first of all, I was flattered by how many people said, it's Pinch.
Yes, we were like, hey, podcast listeners on Instagram and Facebook, how you doing?
So yeah, that was actually a trip we took out there in hopes of seeing more siding on the house, but because of weather, they've been like going back and forth between outside and working inside. So actually, we were there on that trip. That's the last time we've been there. We haven't seen any progress in person since then. But we were there to check out the progress on the interior framing because our contractor had finished framing up all the rooms and the hallways and the doorways and everything. So it was really cool because we finally got to see the floor plan starting to like come into reality.
Right. You could walk through it. There's no drywall. It's still a skeleton, but it's like the bones are in the right place, if that makes sense. So the doorways are where we want them. Although one doorway we are widening a bit, but most of it is final approved. There were, I think, two or three little tweaks that were happening. And then it's really going to get exciting because once the outside is finished, we're moving on to things like HVAC, electrical, plumbing, drywall, and that's when it starts to look like a real house.
Yes. And those are things we've learned from having done like that show house a few years ago and the spec houses. You know, that's the only times that we've done like one whole house at one time.
And it might sound exciting, like, oh, the fun part. But
no, it's overwhelming.
Well, I would describe it as like the brain Olympics of the whole event.
The brain Olympics.
It's the brain Olympics of a house restoration or renovation. Because what I mean is when you're doing electrical, you point and mark and tell people where to put everything. The light switches,
the outlets.
Actual light fixtures, the outlets. There are so many questions about, well, if the door is going to swing, you can't put the light switch behind the door. And then you figure out where you want the fixture. That might be straightforward in a bathroom or a hallway. You might just center it. But in rooms that open to each other, it can be especially hard because you might want to center a light over the dining table. But in the adjoining kitchen, if you center the lights over the island, that might be 2 feet shifted to the left or right.
That's what we were trying to figure out standing there because we were like, do we want the lights centered in the room or is that going to make it weird for where the dining table ends up eventually, like for walking flow around it? And will that line up with the island pendants? So I think it's hard because we're so used to in our houses that we've lived in doing one room at a time.
Right. And being like, it can evolve, no pressure. But like when the lighting is getting wired, that's when things are not drywalled. It's when the lighting is exposed. So to move a fixture after the drywall is not impossible, but it certainly is not the smartest way to plan a house.
Well, yeah, you feel kind of like an idiot because you're like, I should have just done that when it was all open. It's also overwhelming from a cost standpoint too at moments because you're like, wow, the budget for one bathroom might be manageable, but multiply it by three and then add a kitchen.
Right. We're used to doing one room at a time. And when we do spec houses and show houses, it's not our money. So this is the first time it's our money. And all the choices are things we will live with for a long time.
But we're actually going to talk about budgeting for the beach house a little bit later in the episode. So let's not get too deep into that. But this is just to say there's been progress. We're hoping to go out soon and see the completed siding. It won't be like totally 100% finished on the exterior because we still have to like paint some of the trim and like we have to put in new stairs on every doorway because all the stairs crumbling.
Lots of updates needed till it's finished, but it's going to look a heck of a lot better with the new siding.
Yes.
And what's new with me, remember how last episode I was talking about helping one of our friends stage her house to sell it? Well, since that episode came out, a lot has happened. We did our third visit, and John actually came with me because I knew this would be heavier duty. It was like moving furniture, hanging some stuff on the wall, making some frame groupings.
I hung a shower curtain rod.
Yeah, you put some new vents in the bathroom.
Very important stuff.
There were like drills and hammers this time in ways that there weren't in the first two visits. So it was a mad dash. It was a few hours one morning while our son was at preschool that we both were running around the house sort of putting the pillows where I wanted them. I was pulling rugs and moving furniture.
Yeah, you were getting like ready for the photographer because they were coming the next day to do the real estate photos.
Yes. So it was like a morning dash of craziness. The next day, the photographer came and shot it. And the day after that, it hit MLS and was listed. And it sold within 12 hours.
For full asking.
Yes. So we're thrilled for her. We're so sad to see her go. We had a lot of fun with it, actually. I can see how it's super stressful when you're the homeowner. It's one of those things like with the show house. It's really fun to spend someone else's money and boss someone else around. They were so amazing and handy, and they did such a good job. And I just thought you guys might like to hear the update that it sold for full ask. She's thrilled. And she's sad to leave, but I think it was nice for her to see its potential realized instead of leaving it and not ever fully getting to see that like sort of vision.
It's one of those things I feel like I hear a lot of people say when they're selling their house. You know how you have to keep your house really clean for showings and stuff?
They're like, oh, yeah, it's never looked
better. It's never looked this good the entire time I lived here. But now that I'm ready to leave, it's finally like reached what it should have been. And I feel like it's a good testament also to the fact that a lot of these things are not that hard to do. Like, I feel like we often get really worked up and in our heads about like, oh gosh, I can't dive into painting the fireplace or updating my backsplash or doing a new architectural treatment on one of the walls. But these are things that they knocked out like within the course of just a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Without much money. Well, and the other good news is that they're moving a couple hours away from here, but it's actually in the direction of our beach house. So we'll be passing their city on the way there. So maybe they can come hang out there.
Yeah, we keep telling them they're going to come to the beach house with us. So we'll still see them.
I mean, he helped demo the dang thing.
Yeah. He has a special connection to it because it gave him the worst poison ivy of his life.
Yes. I'll let him do some landscaping. How about that?
Yeah, exactly.
Be like, hey, can you take that bush out?
He will never touch anything outside again. We have scarred him.
Well, and since that was sort of an update to last week, I feel like we should take a moment to do a couple other updates. So this is a really important update, guys. It's about how we apparently still slaughtered the pronunciation of hygge.
We got, I think it was an email or a message from someone in Denmark who said they had to pull the car over. They were laughing so hard about how badly we pronounced what we thought was hygge.
I mean, yeah, I thought we nailed it. It was on the cover of the book you mentioned.
The cover of the book said H-O-O-G-A-H, and the accent was on who, like it was hygge, not hygge.
But best I can tell is that we are doing a pretty good job of kind of the Americanization of the word.
No,
that's how all the people on the Today Show said it.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, that makes me feel better.
Yes. I mean, if that is a barometer for accurate pronunciation, the news people are saying it that way.
And that's also, this is a mini update within an update. You guys, you know how I said, I feel like this is going to mainstream, you're going to see it on morning shows. A week later, it was on the Today Show, and I didn't know because we don't pay attention to the Today Show regularly, and we started getting all these Instagrams just all at once, boom, 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 and it was people saying, it's on the Today Show, hygge's
on the
Today
Show. So I watched it to see how they said it.
And they said hygge.
Yeah, they said hygge. But apparently, we are still not saying it as you would if you were a native speaker. So I found this video on YouTube by this gentleman. I'm going to slaughter the name of his channel, Brodstead, but he has a video called How to Pronounce Hygge, and we are going to play it and try to improve our pronunciation. Nice music.
A little jazzy.
Hygge is the thing, and today I'm going to tell you how to pronounce it phonetically. I'm going to assume you know basic French, and we're going to start with...
Bad assumption.
Une.
In front of that, you put an H from hey.
Hey.
The important thing here is that you breathe out the H. Hey.
Hey.
Hoon.
Hoon.
Take away the N and the E, and you put G. So it's a G-H-A-E.
He's losing me.
He is losing me, too.
It's the sound in Michael.
Oh, geez. It's complicated.
So what you got is hygge.
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 May you hygge.
Hygge.
May you hygge. So I guess when you go hooga, like auga, it sounds ridiculous to the Danes. And so you seem more refined if you just say hooga, you just drop it there. Like hooga.
Exactly. Hooga. From listening, I feel like you kind of like deflect off of it. You just kind of barely touch the syllables and move along to the next word. Whereas our like fat American tongues were like hooga, which is like hooga.
That was hooga. Perfect.
Was it perfect? Please. I would
Danes,
like a score.
Let us know. Is that a 9.5 or what?
Well, I actually do have another hygge update, but I feel silly doing that. So I'm just going to keep saying hygge.
Yeah, it's fine.
Anyways, my other update is an email we got from someone named Colleen P. And it was entitled Hygge Disaster.
Which piqued our interest right away.
Obviously. She said, my sister studied abroad in Denmark a couple of years ago and was exposed to hygge while she was there. I was able to visit her for a week and I experienced hygge firsthand. But I have to say it didn't go so well for me. You mentioned the prominence of candles, and you weren't lying. One day I went to a cozy cafe shop where my sister had class, and there were tons of candles. Candles with very large, open flames. See where this is going. I sat down and opened my laptop, put my headphones in, and started surfing the net. All of a sudden I looked up, and there was a Danish woman running towards me. That's when I noticed smoke emanating from my hair.
Oh, no.
Yes, I'm ashamed to say that the ends of my hair caught fire from the flame of a candle on the side table next to me. She said, luckily, everything turned out okay and no one was hurt, but my hair never quite looked the same. And I'm still scarred by the smell. That's all to say, hygge with caution.
Burning hair is the grossest smell. I burnt my arm hair once and it smelled alarmingly bad. Just for arm hair. So I can't imagine.
Can we just clarify your forearm hair?
What do you mean? Oh, my armpit. Yeah. I'm Italian, guys. I have forearm hair and it burnt. And I can't imagine what head hair burning would smell.
Well, I'm glad Colleen was okay. We all now know to hygge with caution. Well, and one other quick update is actually from episode 36. That's when I gave you a quiz about roses, remember?
Yes, I knew nothing about roses.
And we talked about how the rose was the national flower of the United States, but there had been one impassioned senator who'd wanted the marigold.
Oh, yeah. We're like, the underdog of flowers, the marigold.
And we actually got an email from someone on that.
Yeah, here it is. Her name is Tracy. And I want you to just picture getting an email with the subject heading in all caps with like 5 exclamation points that just says marigolds.
I get like 6 of those a day, Sherry.
It says, hey guys, I'm listening to the Valentine's Day podcast and the quiz on roses, and I about fell out of my chair when you mentioned the impassioned senator who wanted marigolds. I live in Pekin, Illinois, where we have a marigold festival because our hometown senator was Senator Everett McKinley Dirksen. He fought for the marigold and lost, but because this town loved him so much for trying, they decided to celebrate with the marigold festival.
I'm glad that his passion for marigolds lives on.
Whenever you want to send an email that you want someone to open and pay attention to, just make the subject heading marigolds with a lot of exclamation points because it makes your inbox more interesting.
So thank you guys for those good stories. We'll put links to those old episodes on the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast so you can double check your own hygge.
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 Hygge. Just bounce off it.
I'm just building on my French knowledge, which is zero.
Buongiorno. Yo no sé. That's Spanish.
That was some Spanish, some Italian. Okay, but before we slaughter any more words, Sherry, I'm going to give you a quiz. Okay, so here's the part of the show that we call What's Not. I give Sherry a list of things in a category where all are real except for one. She has to tell me what's real and what's not. And this comes from apartment therapy. It's a list called 10 things you should never touch in somebody else's home.
Okay.
It caught my attention because you being someone who likes
touches
to touch
everything.
Everything.
I'm like, what is off limits? This is a good question to ask myself.
I figured that it just would be challenging for you.
It will be challenging.
Just to give you kind of a hint and some context.
Uh-huh.
The person writing the article was saying that when they are a guest in someone's home, you should not maybe make yourself comfortable in certain ways. Like you should not just head over to their computer and start typing away, or you shouldn't adjust their thermostat because you're cold without asking.
So, okay, those are two things I don't do.
Yeah,
so maybe I have some boundaries.
You do have some limits. So I'm going to give you 5 things. 4 were from this list and 1 I've made up. Number 1, their bed.
I was going to say that that's one of them. Yeah, they don't like it when you just sit down in your like street clothes. I've been seeing more articles about that. Like, can you not touch my bed with your dirty clothes?
They don't like when you like get under the covers and fall asleep.
Right. When you like pop up and say, surprise.
Okay, number 2, their pets.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, I think someone might say, because I want to tell you, like, the cat bites. Don't mess with the cat.
Number 3, the stair rail.
That's confusing to me.
Number
four. Oh, maybe because you're not supposed to go upstairs until they invite you upstairs if you're visiting, because you're supposed to establish like everyone's on the first level. Use the bathroom down there, fools.
Speaking of the bathroom, number four, the toilet roll.
That's confusing to me. I would hope that everyone in my house feels welcome to use my toilet paper.
Number five, the sponge.
One of these you made up, but it makes sense. So it's going to be hard because it's going to be something I agree with also. So toilet roll is weird. Your face is not giving anything away, John's
making. I'm making every facial expression I know just to throw Sherry off.
Every single question he's
saying. I look happy. I look sad. I look smarmy.
It's all of them. Mostly smarmy. That one is the weird one to me. I mean, do you mean like you can't turn it around? Because if you like the toilet paper to come from over and they like it under.
Do I need to do my facial expressions again?
And then the last one was what?
The sponge.
The sponge. I think that the answer, because it's like you could be embarrassed if someone picks up your sponge and it's covered with like something weird from last night and you didn't clean it. So I'm going toilet roll, but I'm going to be wrong.
And you were wrong. They said, yes, obviously you should touch it as needed, but as you were saying, you should not flip it around. If you're someone who is passionately about it being over or under, you should not, quote unquote, correct someone's role.
I still remember talking to my brother-in-law about it, and he said he's so passionate he changes his mother-in-law's.
I think I changed my mom's.
Your mom is famous for the under.
Well, you know what? I actually learned something from this article, because the author said, for the record, I am a staunch over supporter, as are we.
Yeah.
But I know many friends who keep their roles under for toddler and cat-related reasons. Like a cat were to spin it, it wouldn't unspool in front of you. It would just keep flipping around.
Oh.
You're missing my hand motion, all you people listening.
And John's flipping his hand in emotion and looking excited and a little smarmy.
So anyways, toilet roll was on the list.
Okay, what is it?
The
plant, obvious.
The plant was the sponge.
Oh, really?
Well, the reason I put it on there is because I felt like a lot of these were about personal boundaries. Like they also said like the medicine cabinet.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be on there.
You know, the toiletries, like you can use the hand soap, but like don't go into someone's lotion.
Don't come out smelling like their perfume when you right. walked in smelling stinky.
Their deodorant.
Yeah.
But I thought the sponge, at least when I am over at someone's house, maybe it's more forward of me than I should. But like if we've had dinner, like I like to jump in and help out.
But I feel like we say, we're going to help you do the dishes, or can we help you do the dishes? We don't just like run in the kitchen and start touching their sponge like covertly.
Yeah, I think you do say like, hey, can I help you or whatever.
I would say that has to do with your level of friendship, because when we're at my best friend's house, we are loading and unloading the dishwasher for her. We helped her move in. We like put her dishes away so we know where everything
right,
goes.
Right, that's true. I certainly don't walk into someone's house and like beeline for the sponge.
Yeah.
But I'll put a link to the full list on the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast so you can double check your own personal boundaries.
And also, for the record, I feel like that was cheating because you said the toilet roll and then you didn't read the part that says, obviously you can touch it to get toilet paper.
I mean, if you need help with every quiz, Sherry.
I do. I require it.
You figured out the stair rail.
I did figure that out. No thanks to your facial expressions.
My face is an enigma.
It is.
Wrapped in a beard.
Half wrapped. It's more dipped in a beard.
Okay, but we had said we were going to dive a little bit more into our beach house budget, because you've gotten a couple questions on this, right, Sherry?
Yes, we got an email from someone named Shelley, and she said, hey, John and Sherry, we're shopping for our forever home, and we're looking at houses that will require extensive repairs and renovations. My question is, how do you go about allocating your budget for whole house renovations? We know, for instance, that we'll likely have to replace the roof, plumbing, electrical, and structural issues that arise as we move forward. These are in addition to cosmetic renovations that will be required, such as adding an extra bath and updating the kitchen. We have a large budget to cover these expenses, but what's the best way to allocate our budget to make sure we can cover everything? Thanks, Shelley.
Well, I feel like we should point out this is the first time that we are budgeting for a whole house renovation.
Yep.
So
not spending someone else's money like the show house.
Exactly. But before we kind of dive into that specifically, I feel like we should dive into how you and I generally budget for big projects. Basically what we do, it's a pretty simple system, is that we have a savings account that we are like gradually squirreling money into each month. Whenever we have a little excess or whatever, we put it in there and we just try to build that up. And within that savings account, we have kind of a threshold line where we consider anything below that line our emergency fund. Like we don't want to let it dip below a certain amount, because as two people who work for themselves and don't have a steady paycheck, like you want to make sure you have an emergency fund, right?
Right.
So anything beyond that sort of emergency threshold is kind of our project play money, I guess you could say.
And it's not like, oh, it's $50 over. I'm going to go get a new shower curtain.
Yeah, it's like play money for big things. Like in the way someone might save up for a big summer vacation or a new car, we just tend to spend most of ours on home projects.
Right. Like it's like, oh, we're going to renovate our kitchen, which, by the way, we saved over 3 years and we started planning the kitchen. So it really is a slow build.
Well, and that's sort of what happens is we build it up and we don't, like other people might do, compartmentalize it. Like we don't literally have a savings account that's labeled like kitchen reno and we're not parceling money to that specifically. It all goes into just one big fund. And at various points, we'll kind of look at each other and say like, well, we've got this much extra in the savings. What could we do with that money? Maybe it is we could finally do the kitchen, or maybe it's just enough to tackle a bathroom or whatever. And so we got to a place last fall where we were kind of saying, I think we're in a position where we might be able to take on something big, like a second house renovation.
Yeah, we got really lucky because our kitchen came in under what we budgeted for. And the beach house is also much less than we expected for an investment property. And John and I have been planning to do this forever. I mean, if you commented on the blog 6 years ago, 7 years ago, you might have said, what happens when you're done with your house? And we would say, we've always dreamed about having a beach house or a rental property. So that'd be something fun to do. So it wasn't like we decided this year to buy a beach rental.
Certainly not. It was not like, well, the kitchen's done. Let's save up for a month. Oh, look, we can buy a house. Like, yeah. That certainly is not the picture I want to paint. But once we decided we were going to dive into that project based on what we had available, that's when we could sort of start budgeting for this specific project. And the reason this particular house was a good choice for us was because the house itself was pretty cheap. And obviously, we know the cost of renovations are going to build on that. But those are costs that are going to hit over time. And because we don't really have a hard deadline for finishing this, I mean, we want to keep it moving. But if we get to the point where we can't throw more money at it, we can just slow down and kind of pause for a little while. So it made sense as a choice for our second property because it had a small initial cost. And then the rest of it is something that's going to be dragged out over months and months.
Exactly. And we even strategically chose to fix certain things that were more time sensitive than others so that if we had to pause, say, after we redo the siding and the roof and have the whole exterior secured, it's not a big deal if we have to pause and it doesn't have plumbing or electrical. That's fine. It's protected from the elements. The foundation isn't sinking. The roof keeps it weatherproof. So it's a fine place to freeze in a way that it won't continue to deteriorate.
Right. So once the siding is done and the doors are back on, like if we needed to take a break for a few months to build up that fund to make sure we felt comfortable moving forward with all the interior finishing, we could do that.
It's a nice safety net.
Yeah. And the other thing that helped us budget this specific project, which you heard us talk about when we first mentioned it back in episode 26, is that we bought this fixer-upper beater beach house right next door to an exact same house that had just sold for about three times as much. And so that gave us an immediate sense of what the value of the home could be. We immediately saw the margin. We bought ours for $125, as we said. And I think the one next to it sold for $360.
Something around that.
Something-ish. I forget. So that's like a $200,000 or $250,000 margin that we see that as long as we stay within that and hopefully do it for much less, we're not over-improving the house. We're not making a bad investment.
Exactly. And that margin sounds crazy. Like what? You're going to spend $200?
I hope not.
But what we did to make sure that that was not a possibility was I basically made a giant detailed spreadsheet. And in my giant spreadsheet, each line would say the thing we need, like structural repairs, and then I would list the estimates. And we tried to get two or even three estimates for each thing. So in the spreadsheet, just picture line iteming all the things you know you'll need. So like foundation repairs and the few estimates, electrical, the estimates, plumbing, the estimates, drywall, the estimates, every single thing that you think you'll need. And then I did one big one that was miscellaneous because you know when you get in somewhere, there might be something surprising. And in miscellaneous, we put 20 to 30% of the entire project amount. So we had an overage of 20 to 30% of the entire project. And it doesn't mean we have all this money at the ready, but it means incrementally as we go along and as things are spaced out month to month and we do these projects, we know what they're going to cost and we have them in our total budget.
And I want to throw out a couple other kind of easier options than that. Obviously, we did that diligence and it took us about 2 months to get all those estimates to get a really clear picture of what we might be headed towards cost-wise. But before we even went into that, we got some very rough ballpark senses of what these type of renovations cost. One way we did that is we talked to the realtor we bought it from because she sells a lot of fixer-upper properties in that town. And so she had just a sense from having worked with other homeowners what the type of renovation might cost. That gave us one just kind of number to have as a reference point. The other thing we did is we talked to a bunch of contractors and asked them to give us ballparks. You're not going to hold them to it, but you're just trying to budget. And actually, the guy that we ended up hiring did a good job for us. And he just really quickly said, well, you know, this is typically what drywall will be. This is typically electrical, plumbing, blah, blah. And he just really quickly built a budget so we could see the types of things we'd need to do and some general numbers attached to those. And we could see what a total might be. And that was, again, really helpful as just a reference point to see this is what we're getting ourselves into.
So I think, Shelley, our advice to you would be spreadsheet, line item everything, get multiple estimates. One great thing you can do is if you're going to hire a contractor to manage everything, to actually meet with more than one. We met with two. They each gave us line items, just ballpark estimates for what it might cost. And they even let us tour homes that they had redone. So we knew their style and their aesthetic, and we weren't basing, you know, the cheaper line item guy off of bad work. We got to see their work and see what they were capable of.
Well, and we also, in one of the tours, one of the guys we could tell had very expensive taste for his client.
Exactly. I think some people do beautiful work, but they're only capable of the beautiful work with a super high budget. And it's really the jackpot when you can find someone who does beautiful work on many budgets and can show you a home that was done with a similar budget to yours with similar conditions. He showed us a house that had the same foundation, structural issues. It was a skeleton, just like ours is now. And it was amazing to see how that came together.
Well, yeah, and that gets into a little bit of a separate conversation, but having the budget conversation with a contractor or anyone that you're starting to hire is a good way to gauge whether you guys are kind of on the same wavelength as to how much this should cost.
Exactly.
So I realize that advice probably was not very specific about numbers, like you should allocate X for this task, but that's because those things are so dependent on a lot of factors in terms of the house's condition, the location, yada, yada, yada. So I think that's why a lot of our suggestions are around talking to the knowledgeable people in your area, even if it's neighbors or friends who have gone through similar renovations, anyone who can give you reference points for what is an appropriate thing to spend is a great way to help build that budget for yourself so you can check to see whether you are spending an appropriate amount in certain areas and whether you have the funds to actually execute it to your liking.
And if you're listening, you might be like, oh, this is such a pipe dream. I'll never have the money to buy a beach house or renovate your kitchen. But I just want to encourage you that this is a lot of small changes we made to our lifestyle dating back as much as 10 years ago. You know, we have one car, and I know not every household can do that, but just having one car works for us, and it saves us on the cost of buying another car and the insurance of another car and the gas for another car and all that stuff. I taught myself how to cut hair so I can cut our kids' hair, my husband's hair, even my own hair. I have lots of friends who go to the salon and they even dye their hair, and that's like hundreds of bucks a pop, and they do it many times a year. So those are just a few ways that we have sort of shifted our lifestyle in uncommon but doable ways.
Yeah, we'll put some links in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast to some of our old money saving posts so you can see some of these things that Sherry's talking about.
Yeah, just ways to cut costs, save money. And they might not seem like a lot when you read them sort of in a vacuum, but over time, think about implementing many of these ideas over 10 years. You'd be amazed the difference in your savings account.
So thanks for your question, Shelley. Good luck with your renovation. And if anyone else has a question they'd like us to answer on the podcast, you can leave us a voicemail at area code 571, the number 4, YHLHAP.
And next, we've got some things that we're digging, but first, we're going to take a quick break. So as you guys heard, this week's episode is brought to you by Smart Stuff, who creates clever and stylish kids furniture that's designed to grow from baby to teen.
And by clever, what we mean is that they take what you would expect from kids furniture, you know, like solid construction with an attention to safety, and then they tuck in these little surprise features, like a covert nightlight that's built into a bedside table, or a mirror that swings out from a dresser's end panel for easy use.
And when we talked with Neil McKenzie from Smart Stuff, who also has a 6-year-old daughter, he told us about her favorite secret feature.
In most of our dressers and chests, the very top drawer has a little hidden storage area for, you know, trinkets or what have you. And I know, you know, my daughter was so funny because when, you know, her Nana came to visit, she was really quick to, oh, Nana, look at all my jewelry here and behind, you know, and that way her cousin, who's a boy, he can't find it and mess with it, you know. So that was a big thing. She was really into the whole hidden storage compartments and, you know, the fun that she can kind of have with that now. Hopefully she won't have any fun with that when she gets older.
Well, as long as you know about it.
That's right. As long as you know exactly where it is.
To check out all the secret features built into all of Smart Stuff's furniture, you know, before your kids do, head over to smartstufffurniture.com/YHL.
There you can also enter to win up to $5,000 of new nursery furniture now through April 10th. Again, all of that's at smartstufffurniture.com/YHL.
Okay, so let's get into our digging. Bink, bonk, bink, ba-bink, bonk, ba-bink.
week, I'm digging large-scale lamps. No offense to the little lamps out there. They have a time and a place. But I was walking around the house, as I often do before we're digging, to figure out what I'm digging. And I noticed that lately I've been really drawn to these big
statement lamps.
Exactly. An example would be in our living room. We have two big sort of mercury glass globe lamps. They're very wide. They're like almost like the size of a globe that you'd see, you know, in a kid's room. Yeah, bigger than a basketball. Upstairs in our bedroom, we have these artichoke-based lamps. Same thing. They're very substantial. They're a dark color. They're just, they don't seem airy and light.
They've also got some pretty hefty shades on them.
Exactly. We love,
if I may add.
I love a big shade with a big lamp. Don't put the little shade with the big lamp. It looks kind of pinheaded. It's very sad. And then I realized in our dining room, I just bought lamps that are big and glass, so they don't feel as heavy, but they're large. I'd say they're probably about 24 inches with the shade.
They're like half a Sherry.
They are. They're like a half of me. They're big and they're beautiful. I found them at Target. They have these glass bases that are slightly tinted blue. They almost look like the ocean water. So I will link to some large scale lamps for you guys in the show notes, including the ones we just got. I think they're a great way to add interest and height. If you do a glass-based lamp, they can be light and airy. If you do a big chunky artichoke one or the mercury glass ones, they can be more substantial and heavy.
Well, I think the temptation, and I'm going to point a finger at IKEA here for a second, because they have lots of like little baby lamps. And we have owned a few in the past, so I'm
We're
putting
not
myself
devoid
in this category.
Judgment. Yeah.
But like they're so affordable and you're like, oh, well, that has one light bulb, just like a big lamp. And so you buy it, but you know, scale is so important when you put a room together. And sometimes when you buy bigger things, it doesn't make the room look cluttered. It makes the room feel bigger because it can handle a big thing. And the reverse is when you buy that tiny lamp, it makes the whole room sometimes feel diminutive. So I think, yes, a tiny lamp works on like a bookshelf or, you know, like under a cabinet or something if you need. But in general, if you have the height for it, like go for it.
Exactly. And there's so many good ones. Another thing I was going to say is it used to feel like when you wanted a big lamp, you had to go to some place like Home Goods and get really lucky to find two of the same one. But now with mass retailers like Target, they literally have tagged their lights and they're called like threshold large, threshold small, and they're making the same light, tiny and big. And so just go to the large area. The shades are mix and match, so you can pick a dark linen shade, a navy shade, a white shade. It's super easy to get what you need at these mass retailers.
I was going to say, though, Home Goods is still a good place to go to find a big lamp.
It's great if you can find two. But if you're standing there crying because you can only find one.
Sure, sometimes people only need one lamp.
It's true, but I love a pair.
Not everyone shops in pairs. Well, this week for my word digging, I'm going to jump onto the hashtag tripod train. This is something, if any of you guys follow NPR, they are doing a campaign in the month of March, and I realize March is pretty much over at this point, where they are encouraging people to share podcasts that they like in an effort to encourage more people to listen to podcasts, which
John, who loves podcasts,
I have a self-interest in. First, a thanks to anyone who has mentioned us on Twitter or on social media with that hashtag tripod, T-R-Y-P-O-D, so as in try.
Oh, podcast. I'm getting the pun right now.
you thought I said T-R-I?
Like, yeah, like three-legged.
No, sorry. Tripod as in try a podcast.
Oh my gosh, why did that take me so long?
Sorry for anyone else I left in the dark there.
I get it now.
I thought it was very smart of them to do this because I think there's a lot of people, I was even one for a while, that self-identified as, I don't do podcasts.
Right. I was that for a long time. Like, it's too techie for me.
Right. It's just weird nerds do it, whatever.
Like blogging. Who are those nerds?
I guess I'm not really breaking that stereotype about nerds. But anyways, I think this NPR tripod thing is about like taking that time to say, hey, let me show you, like, let me literally take your phone and show you how to go into this app and download something, how you can listen to it. Like I did that for my dad because I kept listening to this podcast, which I'm going to recommend in a moment, that I thought he would love. And he just didn't get it until I actually took his phone and logged in and downloaded it for him. It was like, look, you hit play just like you hit a song.
Yeah, I was going to say, sometimes we hear from people in the comments on Instagram or Facebook, they're saying like, I don't have time for podcasts. Is there any way you just could like write this in a post? And I keep thinking, as someone who's running around all the time, I actually have more time to listen to podcasts than I do to sit down and read posts because I can do it while mowing the lawn or loading the dishwasher or making dinner or driving somewhere.
I feel like we're preaching to the choir.
Yeah, I know. You guys all already listen. But if you know anyone, you know a YHL devotee who just is like, I can't figure it out, help them.
But let me end this by actually recommending a podcast in the spirit of tripod. Actually, I have two. The first one is one that's releasing this week. It's from the people who created Serial and This American Life, which were NPR born. And it's called S-Town.
S-Town. It's going to be awesome.
The S is short for an expletive.
It is. We had to listen to the trailer to figure it out because I was like, S-Town, is this one of those
like... Sherrytown.
No, I thought it was... Well, I do like the idea of Sherrytown. I thought it was one of those like scripted...
Oh, a fictional podcast.
Because there's something else called Something Town that's like that.
There's...
It's like Crime Town. Is it Crime Town?
Yeah, but Crime Town's not fictional.
Oh.
But apparently it's some murder mystery thing that's told in a really interesting way. So I'm looking forward to it. And I think all 7 episodes are coming out at once so you can binge it like Netflix
style. Yes, that's my favorite.
But on the...
If we could get our act together and be able to release 10 episodes at once, we would do it because it's so fun to binge things. But we just can't get our act together.
I don't think ours is really a plot that people are looking forward to getting to the end of.
Well, what would our What's New be if we released them all at the same time? It'd be like, see the last episode for What's
right,
New.
Exactly. What's New? I just recorded my 9th podcast episode in a row. The other one I was going to recommend, which is one that's been out for a long time, it's another NPR one. I'd figure I'd give NPR some love since they are the ones who started the TRYPOD hashtag. It's one called Planet Money, which sounds kind of weird. It's like kind of financial and economic podcast. I know it sounds really boring.
Right. It sounds dry, like you'd be hearing about like the exchange rate of something in like a
Well, you do a little bit. But what I'll say for them is that they take a lot of money issues and, you know, the economy and financial topics. And they really simplify it and tell it in an interesting, compelling way. Like they did a couple episodes on the whole Wells Fargo scandal that helped me understand the issues. So it like really helps you digest some of the headlines that might seem out of reach. And they also just have some random like fun ones. Like there was one, I'll put a link to this one in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. That was all about a kid who drives around New York City and sells truffles out of his trunk.
Oh, yeah. That was the best.
So I'll put links to some of my favorite episodes in the show notes so that you can skip some of the drier ones. There are some that get a little bit dry. But the great thing is they're only like between 15 and 20 minutes usually. So I often will listen to one like in a complete errand run, like to the grocery store and back. And I get 10 minutes each way and I'm done.
And now you're click listing. So you're sitting in the car listening to
exactly.
it like a boss.
And the Kroger employee thinks I'm all smart.
Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast, a name that you can hopefully pronounce without a YouTube video.
And seriously, we love finding new podcasts, so we're excited to hear your hashtag tripod recommendations. Tag us in any of your podcast loving tweets and feel free to grab someone's phone and teach them how to listen.
And keep telling us what you do while you tune in, like the allergy mom who didn't want to risk transferring a sleeping toddler out of the car, so she listened while parked in her driveway.
Been there, done that. And head over to younghouselove.com/podcast for all the bonus links, photos, and info from this episode, like some progress pics of our beach house and our new big dining room lamps.
And links to posts we've written about saving money and cutting costs.
Later.
Bye.
And don't forget to hugo with caution.
The impassioned senator who wanted marigolds. I live in Pekin, Illinois.
Illouisiana.
That's where I was going with that.